Thank you, Don. This is John Williams. Griffin Philippich is our producer. Joe Brand's in WGN Radio Sports. Doma T. Pongo's normally here on a Saturday morning. He's not. Don, we appreciate you filling in. Yeah. Good to hear you on with Lou Manfredini, too.
Thank you, John.
We're going to go till about 11:45, then Dave Ennett has pregame. Imagine Dave Ennett's day, huh? He drove down to Indianapolis yesterday. He'll do Northwestern basketball, coincidentally, in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll drive across town, and he'll do from Lucas Oil the Northwestern Ohio State football tilt, the 7 o'clock kickoff for the Big Ten Championship.
It's an exciting sports day.
It is for him, and really for Northwestern fans, for all of us. I know people who don't follow football that closely, and they would love to see Northwestern beat Ohio State tonight.
Oh, that'd be the best.
And I can't imagine Dave wants to be anywhere else, though,
than both games. Dave loves his family, but I'll tell you what, he's in heaven right now.
he loves his Northwestern family,
oh,
too.
Oh, man.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, if he could cap off the season, particularly after that lousy start. We lost to the Zips in the beginning of the season. If we could crown it with a trip to the Rose Bowl and a Big Ten championship, well, that would be a fun year.
Here's a question. If they do beat Ohio State, do we get to refer to Northwestern as the Northwestern University?
Let's not, okay?
Yeah, I agree.
Let's not. Every time they do that, right, they do it for the Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Griffin, guys, do we want to go there?
I kind of like, because how much of a dart in the heart would that be to Ohio State if you just stole it away from them?
That'd be the best. No, only because you know how pissed that they would be getting about it.
Griffin, your thoughts?
I imagine it's probably not the first time that somebody's done that fresh off a victory over Ohio State, is my guess, because I do like that idea a lot. It's very tempting.
But we're not Appalachia State, right? I mean, if Milliken beat Ohio State, you could really do a dance. But
Carleton College.
But let's act like we've been there, okay? Even though not as much as Ohio State. President Bush has passed away, 41. Here's a little bit of his life resume. Served World War II. Later made millions in the oil business. Bush entered the rough world of politics. I'm reading from a piece at CNN. Entered the world of the rough and tumble world of politics. Became a member of the House of Representatives in Texas in 1966. 5 years later, President Nixon appointed him to be the ambassador to the United Nations. He took over as the chairman of the Republican National Committee in 1973. At a difficult time, Watergate was breaking then. Nonetheless, he proved effective and his career boomed. President Ford appointed George Bush to be the ambassador to China in 1976, made him the director of the CIA. He ran in the Republican primaries in 1980. He lost to Ronald Reagan. Reagan chose him as his vice president. They defeated Dukakis in 1988 to become, am I skipping here? When Reagan finished his second term, Bush defeated Massachusetts Michael Dukakis in 1988 to become the president of the United States. He would not win re-election. He lost to Bill Clinton in 1992. If you said George H.W. Bush, six words, these are the ones that come to mind. It's read my lips, no new taxes.
Raise taxes and I'll say no, and they'll push and I'll say no, and they'll push again and I'll say to them, read my lips. No new taxes.
I remember when he said that and I said, yo, you can vote for him, but they're going to raise taxes. That's what they do, and they did. Time magazine has a piece that describes some of the crucial life lessons we can learn from this Bush, and here are two of them. Don't forget to say thank you. You know, Barack Obama was famous for reading 10 email from citizens and responding to them personally. George Bush did this, too, 2 hours every night from 8 to 10 o'clock. H.W. would go into his study, and he would read cards, he would write personal letters, sometimes to complete strangers, as the sitting president of the United States. Goodwill, he said, begets goodwill. Don't forget to say thank you, one of the crucial lessons from George Bush, even when you're the president. And this was another motto that he lived by, do your best, try your hardest. It was advice his mother gave him, and he tried to live by it his life. And one other note about George Bush. This is his letter. It's ever so brief. But this is his letter to Bill Clinton. You know the tradition of the outgoing president leaves a note to the incoming one. And Bill Clinton and George Bush fought bitterly. And there were people who were as upset about Bill Clinton becoming president as you would remember until the current president became president. It was hard fought. And so this is George Bush's letter to Bill. It's handwritten, and it says, "Dear Bill, when I walked into this office just now, I felt the same sense of wonder and respect that I felt 4 years ago. I know you will feel that too. I wish you great happiness here. I never felt the loneliness some presidents have described. There will be very tough times, made even more difficult by criticism you may not think is fair. I'm not a very good one to give advice. But just don't let the critics discourage you or push you off course. You will be our president when you read this note. I wish you well. I wish your family well. Your success is now our country's success. I am rooting for you hard. Good luck, George." Well, there's a measure of elegance, eh? You know who I met him a couple of times and understands presidents as well as anybody is Clay Jenkinson, humanities scholar, presidential scholar, and the man who is our Teddy Roosevelt and our Thomas Jefferson when I walk onto stage in Chicago. Hi, Clay. How are you?
Good morning to you, John.
I didn't know you met George Bush a couple times, huh?
Yes, I gave a talk as Thomas Jefferson in Colorado Springs once at a party where he was, and we had a great time. Here's what I liked about him so much. He was self-depreciating, and he had the capacity to laugh not only at himself but at the world. He did not take himself too seriously. So I said a couple of things, as I think Thomas Jefferson, that made him laugh out loud, and I just instantly liked him. And then a few years later, I was very fortunate to win the National Humanities Medal, and it was presented to me in a White House ceremony, along with four other recipients, by President Bush. And he was, he walked into the room, they handed him the script, and he nailed it. But he also was very generous to my wife and to my mother and father who were there. And so I just thought, this is a class act. Now, these are teeny, puny little anecdotes, but they certainly fall in with everything else we know about President Bush.
Is he a different kind of president, or was he? And you know, I'm not thinking specifically about Donald Trump, although I'm thinking about him. But Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, was there a different kind of presidency when he was president?
Well, he comes from a very old American tradition of the patrician president. And if you think of John Kennedy, patrician of a certain sort, FDR. Certainly a patrician, Theodore Roosevelt, then you head back, say, to John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and George Washington. The idea that we are something of a democracy, but it's in our interest to elect these people who are come from a higher station, of a higher level of education, a higher level of social access than the rest of us, and kind of the tradition of the patrician or the aristocratic president. Bush has a little of that in him. His son worked hard to kind of shed himself of that sort of an image. He wanted to, George W. wanted to be more of a populist, but Bush Sr. had that elegance of style, a tiny little bit of social aloofness. He certainly loved the decorum of the office. I think, you know, you were mentioning some of the his mottos. Here's another one that I read in a biography of President Bush. From his earliest childhood, he was taught always to share. So if you have a candy bar, you share it. If you get a bicycle for your birthday, you let your brothers and sisters ride it. And so his motto was, here, take half.
Oh, here, yeah, that's half. Right. Half-half was
Isn't
his nickname.
Great?
Yeah.
Here, take half. And so if that were the way we all lived our lives, I mean, essentially that's a version of the Golden Rule. And he did live that life. But, you know, but as a historian, I just want to put in one little darker note. He was knee-deep in the Iran-Contra scandal of the Reagan years, and worked hard to keep himself from being drawn into that larger scandal. And it could easily have prevented his becoming president, and probably would have today with the kind of watchdog media attention that we get. And I don't think we should forget the Willie Horton ad against Michael Dukakis, which was race baiting, and it really helped to set the tone for some of the kind of ugly opposition research television hit ads that have become standard in our culture since. So George Bush occupies a kind of pivotal place, John. He was there for the fall of the Berlin Wall, and he said the noblest possible thing. He said, we're not going to crow, we're not going to boast, we're not going to lord it over the Soviet Union. We're going to be dignified about this. And he was. And that reminds me of Lincoln saying, we're not going to hit them when they're down. And we're going to help the South now to recover from this. So he had that sort of nobility. But he also had to win elections. And he was drawn by some of his advisors into doing things that helped to set the tone for the madness of our politics today.
Mm. Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Well, it's nice to hear your voice. I will see you on stage again a few times next year, I'm sure, certainly in November. It was sure fun to do the show with you as Teddy Roosevelt at Elgin Community College last month.
I love that, John. You know, I think you and I, you're a little younger than I am, but for our 80th birthdays, we should skydive. think of George Herbert Walker Bush popping out of an airplane at the age of 80 and skydiving. By the way, just before we go, he's the oldest president so far, but Jimmy Carter, if he hangs on a few more months, will become the all-time longest living president in American history. He'll be 94 years old. I think Carter will live to be 130, probably. and Carter is the longest living former president in American history. So George Herbert Walker Bush set a pretty high standard, but I think Carter's going to pass it.
It was a nice run, 94 years of age, 73 of them with the same woman married. So, yeah, he lived a full life. Hey, listen, if folks want to read you and follow you more, what's the best website for them to go to?
All kinds of you. They can go to clayjenkinson.com, clayjenkinson.com, or they can just go to jeffersonhour.com, and they'll find all sorts of things related to this and other issues. I do aspire to be a presidential scholar, but as you know, the two that I know best are the third and the 26th, Thomas Jefferson and Theodore Roosevelt. Roosevelt lived to be 60, Thomas Jefferson 83, John Adams 91.
Hmm. Nice to hear your voice, my friend. We'll be in touch.
Have a great weekend.
Does that voice sound a little familiar? He does our Jefferson and Roosevelt. What he does Roosevelt, it's a much higher pitch. It's 10:24. Hey, it's the holidays, and this is the crappiest looking day I have ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
This is terrible.
It's depressing.
I want my money back. This is Christmas time, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm.
This is foggy, gray, cloudy, dreary, and it's raining. You know, if you're going to pay that much, you might say, well, at least make it snow, and that'll be Christmassy. Although, hey, if anybody's listening, I don't think we need snow. I think I'll just take the rain.
Yeah, that's cool with me, too.
Okay, let's do this, then. We started the show every day this week, and we will continue to through Christmas. We're starting the show with a clip from one of your favorite Christmas movies or TV shows. And then we segue from that into one of our favorite Christmas songs. We've been asking you at 312-981-7200, and I'll continue to do that today. We've been asking you to share with us what are some of your favorite Christmas scenes. It can be from Charlie Brown Christmas. It can be from It's a Wonderful Life. It can be from a new movie. It can be from something old. Tell us what that is, and then we've been featuring them. I'm going to sprint through the five scenes that we've played this week just to kind of put you in a tiny bit of a Christmas mood. On Monday, we started with Hugh Grant's opening monologue from Love Actually.
Whenever I get gloomy with the state of the world, I think about the arrivals gate at Heathrow Airport. General opinion's starting to make out that we live in a world of hatred and greed. But I don't see that. Seems to me that love is everywhere. Often it's not particularly dignified or newsworthy, but it's always there. Fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, husbands and wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, old friends. When the planes hit the Twin Towers, as far as I know, none of the phone calls from the people on board were messages of hate or revenge. They were all messages of love. If you look for it, I've got a sneaky feeling you'll find that love actually is all around.
And they bust into the song.
Not the soundbite I would have picked.
Why? Why do you say that?
I really have a tough time. I am brimming with opinions about Love Actually.
I know you do. I know you do.
But that
is it the 9/11 reference?
Yes.
That's a little jarring.
Yes.
Even then, I thought, really, you're going to go there? But maybe it was so in the moment. I don't know, Griff. I thought when
it come out in 2003. No, seriously. Well, like,
okay,
that's
so maybe
noting.
Just enough time had lapsed that they could comment on it that way.
But it was still fresh in people's minds. I do understand that, but it just is tough now.
It's a little tinny today. Huh?
When you know that, like, I don't know. When you know in just under 2 hours, there's going to be a little boy like drumming to All I Want for Christmas. It's like, is this what we're talking about?
It's
right
a little
now,
bit
real?
Of a, okay. There's some emotional whiplash there, but your problems with this movie go far and deep,
and my love for it goes far and deep too. That's the thing.
You know, I was watching it when I saw that scene and thought, "Oh, I'm going to play it," and that's why we're here today having this conversation. I guess
I know we're trying to go fast. I'm sorry.
That's all right. But I just wanted to say this to you. That now you're in my head when I watch that movie. Do you hate it when somebody's in your head and you're watching or listening to something, and instead of doing it the way you used to do it, you're now running it through their filter? That's what I do.
I think it's more fun to pick it apart. Like, that movie is just so, there's so much there.
That's why we have the Hallmark Channel. I want this movie just to be as awesome as I remember it, but now I'm going, oh, he's right. That is ridiculous.
Just embrace it. I love it for that reason. It's like my favorite thing to watch at Christmas because I find it so outrageous and wonderful.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Okay, we started the show on Monday with that clip and the scenes from people embracing each other at the airport, expressing their love, actually. On Tuesday, we started with Jim Carrey's Grinch. He just got an invitation to go celebrate Christmas with the Who's.
Never those Who's inviting me down now. On such short notice, even if I wanted to go, my schedule wouldn't allow it. 4 o'clock, wallow in self-pity. 4:30, stare into the abyss. 5 o'clock, solve world hunger. Tell no one. 5:30, jazzercise. 6:30, dinner with me. I can't cancel that again. 7 o'clock, wrestle with my self-loathing. I'm booked. Of course, if I bump the loathing to 9, I could still be done in time to lay in bed, stare at the ceiling, and slip slowly into madness. But what would I wear?
If you took that whole movie and said, give me one word that makes you smile, jazzercise. Okay, on Wednesday, we started the show with Chevy Chase. He's your Clark Griswold, and he's just set the Griswold family Christmas tree up in the living room.
Ready? I give you the Griswold family Christmas tree.
A lot of sap in here. Looks great. A little full. A lot of sap.
Even with our artificial tree at my house, when I set it up, I go, looks full. A lot of sap. On Thursday, Will Ferrell is an elf, and he's found out that Santa Claus is coming to the department store where he works. Thursday.
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
Make work your favorite. Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God! Santa here? I know him. I know him.
On Friday, Lou Manfredini said, if you're going to do a scene and it's somebody's favorite, would you do this one? Because this is my favorite scene.
Buffalo girls, can't you come out tonight? Can't you come out tonight? Can't you come out tonight? Buffalo girls, can't you come out tonight?
Dance by the light of the moon.
What'd you wish when you threw that rock?
Oh, no.
Come on, tell me.
If I told you, it might not come through.
What is it you want, Barry? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down. I'll give you the moon, Mary.
I'll take it. Then what?
Well, then you could swallow it. And it'd all dissolve, see? and the moonbeams would shoot out of your fingers and your toes and the ends of your hair. Am I talking too much?
Yes. Why don't you kiss her instead of talking her to death?
How's that?
Why don't you kiss her instead of talking her to death?
Thank you, Lou Manfredini. Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, Donna. Let's pause. If you think that maybe does a little bit to cut through the fog of this not Christmas-like morning, I will play back just part of a conversation I had the other day with somebody who has benefited from the services of the Salvation Army. You talk about a cockles of your heartwarming story. Listen to this next on WGN. This week, we visited with a guy named Theo Coleman. He came into our studio. He works for the Salvation Army. I have a digital kettle. If you go to WGNradio.com on the John Williams page, you'll see it. Click on me and you can make a contribution to my virtual kettle. We have $2,800 in there, and a lot of that got thrown in there after people heard Theo Coleman on my show. He does work at the Red Shield Center in the Inglewood neighborhood, one of the toughest neighborhoods in Chicago. And when he was in our studio, we talked a little bit about some of the services they provide.
We do food pantry there on Wednesdays and Thursdays.
Do you have a recreational facility there?
We do. Man, the Red Shield Center, we have a giant basketball court, also workout facilities upstairs, and a full track, full-size track.
That's at Red Shield?
Yes.
Because I'm thinking also in my head right now of what you have at Croc, but that's way further south. But you have this for the people, for the community in Englewood. Think about that. I mean, people are afraid to drive through Englewood, let alone devote their lives and provide services to people, a gym, a treadmill for you to exercise on, a place to safely get groceries, a place where the kids can go and sing and not only have good values, but do anything safely.
Yeah.
The Salvation, you know, it's funny. Everybody else runs away. Target wants to leave some neighborhoods, blah, blah, blah. The school we described closed.
Yeah.
People still live there.
Yeah.
People still live there. And if we all throw up our hands and say, well, boy, these people, what are we going to do? Nothing's going to get better if somebody doesn't stay and help. Salvation Army never leaves. That's where the Salvation Army goes, for crying out loud. And that's you guys. You have an interesting personal story relative to the Army, too.
Yeah, I do, John. I've got to say this. I almost relapsed on that Pabst Blue Ribbon commercial,
man. I shouldn't have been talking about the beer stuff. We were doing this. All of us beer drinkers going, oh, isn't that a great beer? Were you a drug addict or an alcoholic?
I was both. I was alcoholic and drug addict for 13 years.
At what age did you start?
I started at 23.
That late?
And it's so weird. I went to a Christian school, private school. And when I got into college, man, I went crazy.
So this wasn't a kid who was born in a bad, tough neighborhood who never had a rudder. It sounded like you were doing okay?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. He was doing pretty good.
You have a mom and dad at home?
Just a mother.
Yeah.
And very grateful for her. Beautiful lady.
What happened at school?
You know, I think maybe the sheltered life, once I got a chance to kind of spread my wings and do what I wanted to do, I just did it too much, I guess. That's what was going on with me.
When did you realize you had a problem?
I think I was about 30. I went from alcohol to smoking weed, and then I think I maybe snorted cocaine, and then right away went to smoking crack, man. It was crazy.
What happened to your family or personal life as a result of all
that? It was terrible. I lost wives, houses, cars. A lot of the trust of my family members was just gone. They loved me. They wanted me to succeed, but the trust level was gone.
Were you able to keep a job?
No, not at all, man.
So then
were
you living at the rock bottom?
I lived 2 years homeless. So I had 13 years alcohol and drug addiction. And two of those years I was homeless on the streets of Indianapolis, Indiana. And man, it was terrible, John. I tell you, when you talk about what the Salvation Army does, truly, they reached out and helped me when I didn't have anything. I didn't have insurance to go into a program. I didn't have money, and then I didn't have any options.
When somebody's going through that, do they appreciate what they're doing to themselves?
It depends. It depends on the stage that they're at in addiction.
Are they like, were you like, okay, I know this is this is as bad as it gets, but I got to handle it. I'll get this. I'll fix this. I'll get myself together.
That's how it starts. That's exactly how I felt when I started using drugs and alcohol. And then once it got a hold of me, I had lost so much over this stuff that it felt like just a reflex. It was like a whole nother life.
How did you come to the Salvation Army then? What happened?
Well, I was on the streets of Indianapolis, and I had been up for maybe three or four days in around 16th Street in Indianapolis. And a friend of mine, Envoy Stephen McNary, that I had met in Indianapolis, was running the Salvation Army Adult Rehabilitation Center in Gary, Indiana. He had heard how bad I was doing, told some people, hey, if you see him, give him my number, and I'll get him to the center in Gary and help him get himself together and help him find a job. I wasn't thinking about that at all. I just had his number in my pocket. I was walking down 16th Street, and my feet were blistered. I was really doing bad, but I was just looking for my next high. That's all, because once I got the high, I felt like I was okay and I could make it, you know, for a little bit. I went into a McDonald's that normally the lady puts me off the lot for panhandling or trespassing or, you know, anything. And it was so weird. I went in and went to the register, and she was working the register. And I gave her the number to call for me to get some help. And she just pointed to the back of the restaurant for me to go sit down. And it was about 8 in the morning. And I sat there in the McDonald's till about 8 that evening. She called and she came back and she said, they have a bus ticket ready for you to Gary, Indiana. Hmm. And I was very grateful. She said, can you get there? And I said, I'll try. You know, I've got blisters on my feet. There was a mailman on the side of us sitting, eating his food. And he walked over and said, I'll take him. And I rode to the bus station in a mail truck to Gary, Indiana. It'll be 11 years in December, December 22nd.
How hard was it when you were with the Army to, I mean, the shelter's one thing, but you had to quit the drugs. How hard was that? And the Army is one of the leading drug and alcohol rehabilitation providers in the country.
Oh, yeah.
So were you in an Army program then?
I was. Adult Rehabilitation Center in Gary, Indiana, right there on 11th Street.
How long were you in there?
A year, and then I started working in the thrift stores. It was hard. It wasn't easy, but the process that you go through in recovery it's never easy. But for some reason, I was ready. I started building a support group. I started getting mentors and started serving people. I started, you know, praying. I started changing and just, you know, the old saying, one day at a time. You know, a lot of times for me, it was like 1 minute at a time, because, man, I had it bad, man. You know, it was like, you know, I had to learn, almost like learning how to walk again, you know.
It sounds like there were a lot of little angels at the right time, at the right place for you. And I don't mean to praise the Salvation Army too much, because none of this, it sounds like, happened, but that you decided you were going to fix yourself. Mm-hmm. But doggone it, where would you be without the Salvation Army today?
Man, I can't even imagine.
And where would those other people be? The Red Shield Center, just where would those people be if they didn't have that? Where would the people be who are getting their lives in order because there's a Salvation Army out there? And, you know, we say this all the time. Everybody knows it, but I'm going to say it again. The Army does these services every day, every hour of the year. They remind you that they need your help between Thanksgiving and Christmas. We have a kettle online. If this man's story, Theo Coleman, who is doing it in Inglewood, for God's sakes, if this man's story motivates you, then go online and make a donation to our kettle. So that was from our Thursday show. Thea was in the studio, back live now on this Saturday morning, this dreary Saturday morning in downtown Chicago. But some people walk into a room and you like them. He seems like such a nice, warm, personable person. And I imagine that's always who was there. But when he went to jail for some of his crimes, when he was at rock bottom, interesting, isn't it, to know that there was this nice guy inside, but he needed help. The Salvation Army provides food and shelter and toys and help to guys like him. So if you are motivated, it's real simple, WGNradio.com. And then on the John Williams page, you'll see me wearing a Christmas suit with my producer, Elif. You click there and give away, please. Let's go into the WGN Radio newsroom. That would be the Northwestern Medicine newsroom to you and me. Don Kleppen has the latest after this. Thank you, Don. This is John Williams on behalf of Don and myself and Griffin, our producer, and all of us at WGN Radio. Sorry. Sorry, everybody. What a lousy weekend.
Ooh, yeah.
You woke up this morning and thought, oh, I'm going to do some shopping, or I want to do whatever I'm going to do. This is not a good-looking day.
Mm-mm. Imagine if you have to collect your car after the parking ban was enforced, too, on a rainy day like this.
Yeah.
It could be really bad.
Worst Christmas season ever. Mm-hmm. But the sun will shine again someday soon, and I don't know. It'll get better.
It'll be okay. It'll be fine.
I'm popping vitamin D's over here. I got all the lights up in the studio as bright as they can be. You know what it is? I've got a lot to do this weekend. Brenda and I are traveling up to see some friends in the suburbs tonight. And then tomorrow we're driving to Joliet. And the weather is just like, oh, it would be so much better if it was a little easier. But listen, I'm not a complainer, and I hope you appreciate that about me. The Mincing Rascals is the award-winning, judged this year, best podcast in the city of Chicago. We recorded on Thursdays. If you follow current events in Chicago, Illinois, and across the country, I think you'll enjoy The Mincing Rascals. It features some of our friends from the Chicago Tribune and some of your friends here from WGN Radio. Here's part of the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast that we feature on our Saturday show. And this week it includes Eric Zorn, the Chicago Tribune columnist, Scott Stantis, their cartoonist, our Steve Bertrand, and me. Patty Vasquez is in the mix, too, who you hear at 7 o'clock most nights on WGN with Andrea Darlis, that mix sitting in the studio. We were talking about the three officers who have been charged in the cover-up of the Laquan McDonald shooting. Remember, Jason Van Dyke was convicted, but you'd never know anything went bad on the police side based on the reports that these officers filed.
You know, this trial is not getting nearly the attention
it
that the
not.
Jason Van Dyke trial got, but it is in some ways much more important because the Jason Van Dyke trial really focused on that 6 seconds right at, you know, between the time that he gets out of the car and starts shooting Laquan McDonald. This trial ostensibly is going to focus on the 6 hours, the 6 weeks, the 6 months after the shooting and what the police did and didn't do to see that justice was done and that it was a good shoot. I'm really surprised at the amount of anti-Laquan McDonald stuff that has been introduced into this trial that they have gone over. You know, you keep hearing, well, he was jaywalking and he was slashing tires and he scratched the windshield of a police car. They're putting Laquan McDonald back on trial in effect. They're rerunning the Jason Van Dyke trial. And the only reason that it's not completely an outrage is that the judge is just kind of letting it go. And it seems to me that the judge is just saying, look, I'm not going to stop these defense attorneys from relitigating the entire shooting, which is what they're doing, because that might be grounds for appeal. Because the judge knows what happened.
And it's a bench trial.
Yeah, I'm saying it's a bench trial. If this were a jury trial, it would be completely outrageous.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So the judge is just letting them go. So it doesn't seem to me to be outrageous on its face because the judge knows the situation. She's giving these guys all the room they need to talk, go on and on about all kinds of crazy theories. One witness, the medical examiner, was reporting that Detective March called in and said that it was telling him that Laquan McDonald had lunged at Van Dyke and Walsh. And the lawyer was going, well, how do you know it was March? Like, we couldn't have been someone who was impersonating him. Like,
wow.
Yeah, like that happens, right? I mean, after the shooting, which nobody really thought at the time was all that big a deal, like, yeah, there's going to be an imposter calling the medical examiner's office. And the judge just everyone's kind of letting it go because I think everybody trusts the judge to see through all this stuff and get to the fundamental question, which is not actually all that difficult. The question is, did these guys lie? To try to cover up what Jason Van Dyke did, and
And the answer is yes.
And the answer seems to be yes.
Seems to be yes.
It's a hard yes.
Okay, yes.
Oh, my God.
I'm trying to be fair.
This is easier than the Van Dyke trial, right? I mean, even though the video outed him, he said, well, my perspective was different, blah, blah, blah. But there's no doubt about this.
And for those of us who, and I think I speak for everyone who in this room right now, who support the police, there are people out there who are willing to take a bullet for you. And that's amazing. But there is also this culture that they will lie to defend their own. And hopefully that will get rid of that or at least diminish it significantly going forward. And I don't think that hurts the police. I don't think that hurts their policing ability. And it certainly doesn't diminish my view of the job they do.
And from what I'm reading about Dora Fontaine, who is the officer who said she didn't make those statements, and then the attorneys were saying, well, you're afraid to lose your job. What kind of job could you have? I mean, going after her and saying, well, you have two homes.
It was very personal.
That's
very
insane.
Personal. She had made a phone call at work that night because she had a sick kid, apparently. And, the defense attorney was going, that's the kind of police officer you are, making a personal phone call while you're on duty. It's like, jeez.
Yeah, they really turned on their own here.
Yeah.
But you know, Eric's right. I mean, so that night, Van Dyke made a bad decision. A cop in the heat of the moment, who knows why, pulled the trigger, emptied his revolver, right? But this is a completely different thing.
Yes.
That was one police officer in one moment. This is a culture of policing that says we will, even in that case, lie to protect him from the justice that Laquan's family deserves. This is the bicentennial year for Illinois. To help celebrate its birthday in December, the State Journal Register in Springfield and the Lincoln Library have put forth a list of the 10 most unforgettable moments chosen in online voting. And before we reveal the top 5 or 10, let me just remind you how flawed and stupid online voting can be. For Time Magazine's Person of the Year, the current number one pick by online voters is BTS, the South Korean boy band. Number 2 is the Thai cave divers that rescued those kids. Ariana Grande is getting more online votes than Donald Trump, and Trump should not be Time's Person of the Year this year. It should be journalists, but never mind all of that. Here in Illinois, online voters say number 5, the Lincoln-Douglas debates. Number 4, Lewis and Clark. They started their voyage downstate. Number 3, ending slavery. Illinois was the first state to pass the 13th Amendment. Bigger than that, number 2... Cubs win the World Series in 2016.
Much more important.
Sorry, world. And number 1, Lincoln put to rest in Springfield's Oak Ridge Cemetery. Bertrand, your thoughts, go.
I would go with Lincoln, number 1, Barack Obama, number 2, maybe, the first African-American president. And I think the World's Fair is getting short shrift. I mean, what I know from it was reading The Devil in the White City, but the world literally came to Chicago. And the buildings, there's still, you know, there's still an impact on it now on the south side.
Patty, give me your top 3.
I'm sorry, but I have to give Lincoln 2. I wish I could condense them, but ending
slavery.
Yes,
you can do whatever you want.
Well, it was 80,000 people went through the Illinois Capitol to pay their respects, which is incredible when you think it was just 2 days, and where people must have come from, how they traveled to get there is astounding to me, and it, I think, pays tribute to how important he was then. Ending slavery, without Illinois, I don't know that we would have ended slavery as early as we did, because Lincoln's early life here had an impact on the rest of the history of this country. So I think that's important as well. And then I want 4 or 5, but women voting, I think, is significant as well, because we became the first state east of the Mississippi to let women vote. And also
that's on the top 10 list,
yes, so, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, you guys.
No, that's okay.
That was 3.
Well, if you want to do one more.
And the nuclear age.
Scott Stantis.
I would say number 1 would be nuclear age, because that's...
Splitting of the atom at the University of Chicago.
Yeah, that unleashed all sorts of hijinks.
Yes.
Number 2 would be Morning Lincoln.
Hiroshima reduced to hijinks.
And I have to have 4, I'm afraid. Ending slavery.
What's with you people?
Sorry.
He's just virtue signaling here.
Right. 200 years.
Let's tie the World's Fair with ending slavery. The World's Fair brought people to Chicago and premiered the city as the world-class city that it is. And, of course, ending slavery, well, it ended slavery.
Well, I'm going to go with Lincoln-Douglas debates as being something that's sort of associated with Illinois, particularly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know
that
ending slavery
one.
Is more
it
important,
is.
But I don't think if you ask people in the rest of the country, where did the end of slavery really begin? I don't think they would say Illinois. And the Lincoln-Douglas debates were important for raising Lincoln's profile, and which ultimately led to the end of slavery. The World's Fair, I think, is clearly something associated with Chicago and Illinois. And I would put the 68 Democratic Convention, which is not
that's
on this top 10 list, but if people associate, you know, things around, I'm thinking of the things that make Illinois distinctive around the world, around the country. That's certainly a serious.
And let's not forget the White Sox wearing shorts.
That's a good one. My Barack Obama vote was sort of the political equivalent of people who voted for the World Series for the Cubs because it happened during my lifetime at this time. Mm-hmm. You guys, I'm giving that too much attention, you think?
No,
I don't know. This list of 10 has Blago going to jail as number 10.
Right.
And that's, that cannot be one of the top 10 events in Illinois history.
I think the first black president of the United States is significant, especially considering the kind of climate we're living in now. I don't know when we're going to have another black president because I'm
it could be the next one.
It could be. Well, I mean, the test for me is if you just say to people, rather than we're all working off this list here that was provided to us, if you just stop someone on the street and say, name the top three things that happened in Chicago or Illinois in history, what would those be? Maybe the fire. Yeah, seriously.
Oh, fires, yeah, no kidding.
How's that not in the top 10? I mean, the whole city.
It's not a warm fuzzy, but Blago going to jail isn't either, so I'm with you guys on that.
There's a recency effect, too, with that.
Yes,
right,
absolutely.
That's the thing. That's what I mean about Obama. And the
We're coming up on the 10-year anniversary, by the way, of Blago being frog marched out of his house. I think it's December 8th or 9th. So
here's my top
five.
Number one, I've put all of the Lincoln stuff together.
Okay.
So slavery, Lincoln Douglas, him being buried in Springfield. None of that happens without Lincoln. So that's number one. Number two is Obama. Number three is the atom being split. And maybe that should be higher. I mean, the atom was first split in Chicago. Number four, the Columbia Exposition. And then number five, the Cubs, because whatever.
I feel so bad for Blago.
What did you say?
He's the host. He gets five, all right?
I'm the only one.
I feel so bad for Lewis and Clark. I feel like we need to all brush up on our history a little bit.
Or Pierre Marquette came through. Yeah. Or Ronald Reagan. Isn't close to the list.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He's a Eureka boy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And the White Sox wearing shorts. I think that's right.
Can we put the shower in the outfield with the White Sox wearing shorts? Can we do
this? Disco demolition, come on.
In Trump land. I don't know where to begin this week. Should we play John Mulaney's reminder that every day is like a horse in a hospital?
It's like there's a horse loose in a hospital. I think everything's going to be okay, but I have no idea what's going to happen next. And like none of you know either.
So that's how we introduce conversations about national political scene, the horse in the hospital. And then the Mincing Rascals went from there. And you can hear it all wherever you subscribe to free, finer podcasts. The Mincing Rascals, judged this year the best one in the city of Chicago. Thank you, Eric Zorn, Patty, and Steve, and Scott. By the way, did we miss any? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Call or text right now if there's something that you think Illinois should be remembered for. And besides governors in jail, isn't it sad that that comes to mind so quickly? What else is it? What should be on that list? This is WGN. Hey, Don, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Good, King John. How are you doing?
Talk to me, man.
Well, you guys mentioned the splitting of the atom. Illinois is also the home of the world's first privately funded nuclear generating station, Dresden Island down in Morris.
I know that place well, but I didn't know that was the first.
That's the world's first. There's a sign in front of it, and that was started the year I was born.
You know, it's not on the list. I mean, in the top 10, the Chicago fire changed more than just the city. That's not on the top 10. Blagojevich
created skyscrapers.
In part. And also the Sears Tower was the tallest building in the world at one point. I think if that was sort of the flag bearer for architecture in Chicago, you could say the Sears Tower was really something most memorable about this state. The Democratic Convention in 1968 is not on the list. The list goes on, but I like your contribution. That's pretty good, Don.
Thanks, King John, and thanks for having Clay Jenkinson on this morning.
Wasn't he good?
He's fantastic.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. Thank you, Don. Clay Jenkinson portrays Presidents Jefferson and Roosevelt when we're on stage. We asked him, though, as a scholar, and that's what he is, to comment on George Bush's passing. 41 has died, and he was eloquent, as he always is. Okay, we need to pause. It's 11:27. We'll pick it up here on the other side of news. Remember, at 11:45, it's Northwestern basketball. We got a noon tip-off. Dave Ennett is in Indiana, and he'll stay in Indiana for the Northwestern Wildcat-Ohio State football game this evening as well. 6:30, his pregame coverage of that. 38 degrees, huh? 38 degrees.
That's what they say.
Well, it feels like that. And actually, Griff said, stop complaining about the weather. You know, I mean, how does that help? I believe that's not a direct quote.
I did not say that. You said there's some phrase like the worst holiday season ever.
And I just said, okay.
Okay.
That is a bad day. Absolutely.
Cross the line. Fair enough. Thank you for that sort of, you know, Griffey, that's the job of the producer to put the ship back on course. And in fact, downtown right now, it's only crappy. So it's a lot better than it was earlier. It's not pouring. And we hope you have a happy weekend. How am I doing? And we just wish you the happiest of holidays possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a vitamin D hoagie when I get home and turn on the lights and have a nice weekend. And I actually mean that. Don, it's been a pleasure to talk to you today.
And you as well, John. I got to tell you, a vitamin D hoagie sounds like it should be a menu item somewhere.
You and I don't get a chance to visit that often. You're filling in for Domati, doing a great job today with Lou Manfredini and I. And then in about 6 minutes, we'll pause and bring you pregame coverage of Wildcat basketball with Dave Vennett in Indiana. Or he's in Bloomington, right, Mark Harmon?
He's in Bloomington. Greatest day ever for Dave Vennett.
That we were laughing about this. I mean, I know Dave loves his family, but boy, he is really happy to be in Indiana today.
Well, and he brought his lovely wife along. So
good for them.
I don't know if she's doing both the basketball and football doubleheader. I'm assuming she probably is. Who knows? But what a day. I'm going to go call a game against the Hoosiers in one of college basketball's best buildings, and then I'm going to go lead the Cats, damn it, to victory over Ohio State tonight.
I asked him yesterday, how big a deal would it be if we beat Ohio State? And he said, well, we're not, you know, the Northwestern of yore. We're a legit team. Hey, we had one Big Ten game this year? So Northwestern's a fair player in this match. But I'm just thinking how Ohio State handled Michigan. And I'm thinking, boy, if we beat this, this will really be sweet.
Well, first of all, it's a huge task for them to beat the Buckeyes. They're a 14-point underdog.
That's not the way Dave put it.
Yeah, I love Dave's optimism, and he's absolutely right that they can win the game. But it would be a tremendous doing today. And the bigger thing is they'd be going back to the Rose Bowl for the first time since '96. Haven't been.
What do they have to do to win the game?
I think, John, let's keep it real simple. I think they need to play really, really well. I think Clayton Thorson, their quarterback, has to have a phenomenal day. I think that they need to run the ball incredibly well. Isaiah Bowser, their freshman running back, has been incredible. He's got to be well over 100 yards, I would think. And getting turnovers helps.
Dave made it sound like a low-scoring game is the best hope for us, too. Something in the 20s as opposed to letting them run up. We're not going to beat them 70-60.
No, we do not want to shoot out. There's no doubt about it. But they're going to have to score. I don't think you can – it's not going to go 10-7. You're not going to limit Ohio State to, you know, that type of game. The Cats are going to have to be pushing 30, I would think, to win the game.
Addison Russell is the subject of our news click at WGNradio.com. We have a daily web poll question up for the weekend is, are you happy that the Cubs are tendering a contract to Addison Russell? You get to vote yes or no. Griffin, we looked at that last. It was favoring about 57%, slightly more. We're saying, what was the voting on
that? It was like 58% people were happy about it.
What do you say to that?
I mean, happy is a tough word.
Yeah.
You know? But I think that what the Cubs are doing is
right.
Right is a good word. I was gonna say maybe I respect what they're doing. Look, here's a guy who obviously is significantly troubled, needs help. They are owning their part in creating that and trying to do something to help him and perhaps help their organization at the same time, as well as sort of create a blueprint for this going down the line so it doesn't happen again. I think all of that is good. And if he complies and he's going through therapy and all that type of stuff and shows himself to be a model citizen, being back on the field at some point, you know, down the line, I think is reasonable.
So then talk about what Kansas City did with their running back.
So it's real different, right? Kareem Hunt, unbelievable running back for Kansas City in his second year. He's burst on the scene last year, just running all over the NFL. And now gets a video released by TMZ of him pushing a woman against a wall, and the Chiefs have released him, and the NFL has suspended him.
Heck of a day for him yesterday, man.
Right.
Just one day, all that happened.
Right, and so the difference, well, there's many differences, but one of the key
difference. 90 seconds.
90 seconds. Well, I just think it's interesting. The key difference, John, is there's video of that. So if we had seen what Addison Russell was alleged to have done,
that would have changed our perception of this story.
I would think so. When people see those videos, it's, you know, change, you just, it's one, It's a whole other thing than reading it, right?
I'm playing back in my head the elevator scene right now.
Yep.
With Ray Rice.
Ray Rice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you know, yeah, maybe we didn't word it perfectly, but I think that a young man who has a talent, be it a bus driver or a school teacher or a baseball player, you should be afforded the opportunity to do your job, you know, do what you're talented at. And maybe the company looks a little greedy if they're also helping him, right? But let's give him a chance. You know, if he fails this opportunity, then it's a different conversation. But right now, I don't mind the Cubs doing it, and I hope that, Lord, I hope this young man rights himself.
Yeah, and there's no guarantee that he'll ever play for the Cubs again. They're just offering, they're creating a window where it's possible that one day he might be back on the field.
You're part of the football coverage tonight?
I am. Let's go, Cats. Come on, baby.
Mark
one time.
Carmen will, and is Adam Hoge on the trip, too? He'll be on the sidelines?
Adam Hoge is, I believe he's doing the double dip with Dave. He's going to watch the basketball game and then make his way to Indy.
It's a pleasure to work Saturdays. We're cutting a little short today. I'm John Williams. Griffin Filipich, our producer. Thanks, Griff. Joe Brand was doing some sports for us. Nice to hear Don Kleppen's voice as well. Doma T will probably join us next Saturday.